You sing as though that's a happy thought, and I hope that it is to each and every one of you. It is to me, in anticipation of being with my Lord forever, joining all the throng of servants that have gone on before me. We're talking about morals this week. It's going to be necessary on the part of each of us to lay aside some things that we do along the way that are not right, do not put us in a good light with the world or with our God. And I want to continue that vein of thinking tonight as we look at a new subject for tonight. We're talking about the tongue tonight. Get this thing separated. An old Chinese proverb says that a single conversation across the table with a wise man is worth a month's study of books. The key word in that proverb is conversation. What kind of conversation are you engaging? You know, we're concerned about good conversation because good conversation fixes ideas in our mind. Have a good conversation with you, I can get some good ideas. You can get some good ideas, hopefully. We can develop those ideas. We can clarify our thinking. Bring about some creative thinking on our part. But bad conversation produces just the exact opposite. Someone has said that speech is a mirror of the soul. As a man speaks, so is he. I don't know who said that. But I know one thing, it agrees with what my Lord said. Matthew, the 12th chapter, Jesus talks about the tongue. Talks about it being, or having its source in what we fill our hearts with. Matthew 12, verse 33. Jesus says, either make the tree good and its fruit good, or else make the tree bad and its fruit bad. For a tree is known by its fruit. Brood of vipers, how can you, being evil, speak good things? For out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaketh. Jesus knew the audience to whom he was speaking. He knew their hearts were filled with evil. He's asking the question, being that the case, how can good come from an evil heart? So what we fill our hearts with, what we fill our minds with, is going to come out in our speech. That's what Jesus is saying. It's essential that we be concerned about what we're filling our minds with, what we're thinking about. Solomon in Proverbs says that anxiety in the heart causes depression. In other words, anxiety or heaviness, problems, difficulties in life can cause our heart to stoop, or it can cause depression, whichever you want to look at that word to be. It causes our heart to stoop. On the other side of the coin, Solomon says, and again so succinctly, a good word can make it glad. What kind of words do you use? What kind of choice, you know, what choices do you make? You think about what the tongue can do. Just ask yourself some questions as we begin this lesson tonight. There's nothing more common than our conversation and our speech. But do your words encourage others? Do they teach others things that are good? Do they lift heavy hearts? Or do your words discourage? Do your words gender strife? And number two, how cautious are you in choosing the words that you use? How cautious are you in choosing subjects about which you're going to talk? And number three, are your words different when you're talking with one group of people than when you're talking with another group of people? And if so, why is that the case? Why are you choosing different words here than you do over here? Might be a very good reason. I understand that. But there might not be, too. While our conversation is a very important part of our lives, we need to know the nature of the tongue, the nature behind that little thing that we use all the time. Sorry, I should have separated these things before I came in. As we look at James' writing about the tongue, he has some important things to say about the nature of the tongue. Turn with me to James, the 3rd chapter, and let's do some reading together. Helps us understand what we're up against. When we talk about conversation and how important that is, from a Bible perspective, James gives us some insight as to some of the problems we have with our tongue, with our speech. He issues a warning at the very beginning of the chapter, in chapter 3, concerning our being teachers and receiving a stricter judgment. And in verse 3, he says, For we all stumble in many things. If anyone does not stumble in word, look at that. If anyone does not stumble in word, he's a perfect man, able also to bridle the whole body. Indeed, we put bits in horses' mouths that they may obey us. And we turn their whole body. Look also at ships, although they are so large and are driven by fierce winds, they are turned by a very small rudder wherever the pilot desires. So, thinking about the tongue now, he wants to make the application. He says in verse 5, even so the tongue is a little member, just like that ship with a small rudder, very small part of the ship, and yet it turns the ship. He says, even so the tongue is a little member, boasts great things. See how great a forest a little fire kindles. And in verse 6, then he says, the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. Look at that first one. The tongue is a fire. Just stop and think about what James is saying here. In verse 5, he says, how great a matter that little fire can kindle. How great a forest that little fire can kindle. May consume all the goodwill that we've ever had with anybody. Just one word. Just one ill-chosen word can destroy all the goodwill that we ever had. Just by not thinking a little bit. He says it's a fire. Solomon says in Proverbs 26, verse 20 and 21, where there's no wood, the fire goes out. Do you really have something to talk about? Is it really all that important, or just loose-tongued? The tongue is a fire, he's saying. Someone has said an ounce of keep your mouth shut is worth a bushel of apology. We're often talking when we ought to be keeping our mouth shut and seem to have no qualms about that. Just need to turn our tongue loose and let it do its thing. If we would just think a little bit, once in a while, before we turned our tongue loose, maybe we'd say something that was good, something that was positive. But how often do we do that? We could stop a lot of problems before they ever got a start. James goes ahead to say that it's a world of iniquity, this tongue. Look at verse 6 again of our text. He says it's a world of iniquity. He said the tongue is so set among our members that it defiles the whole body and sets on fire the course of nature, And it is set on fire by hell. I want you to look at that verse again. And I want to read the New English Bible translation of that verse. Look at it carefully. It represents among our members the world with all its wickedness. It pollutes our whole being. It keeps the wheel of our existence red hot. And its flames are fed by hell. James saying it's a fire. It's a world of iniquity. And all the evil that it can accomplish, it's fed by the fires of hell. You know, it behooves each of us to really think about what we have in our mouth, what we have at our disposal, at our to use. James goes ahead to say, as we continue reading, let's look at verse 7 first. He says in verse 7, "For every kind of beast and bird, of reptile, and of creature of the sea, is tamed, and has been tamed by mankind. But no man can tame the tongue. It is an unruly evil, full of deadly poison." James says, it cannot be tamed. I don't think he means absolutely, it cannot be tamed. I don't think he means this in the universal sense. But he's talking about the tongue that is unrestrained. When there's no control, we're headed for serious, serious trouble. You know, there's four things that can silence the tongue. Paralysis can do it. Maybe if we were paralyzed from here up, we'd solve a lot of our problems. I don't know. But paralysis can do it. But so can excision. Just cut the tongue out. That can silence it. The third thing is, death can silence the tongue. There's only one left. And that's the grace of God. That's our faith in God. Our faith in His principles of right and wrong can silence the tongue. Show me a person doesn't control his tongue, and show you a person doesn't have faith in God. Isn't concerned about such things. But just the reverse is true. Show me a person to control his tongue, show you a person has faith in God. It's faith in the grace of God. What God can do for him. You know, hell is paved with a lot of good intentions. We have a lot of good intentions, but are we really practicing what we know is right? James goes ahead in our context here in verse 9. He says, "With it," the tongue now, "that which is full of deadly poison," he said, "with it we bless our God and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in the similitude of God." Now just stop and let that sink in. The same tongue can do two things. It can either bless God or it can curse men. Verse 10, "For out of the same mouth proceeds blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not so to be." It's a fountain of either blessing or cursing. You know, here's a freak of nature if there ever was one. It can produce both. Solomon Ecclesiastes says in chapter 18, verse 21, "Death and life are in the power of the tongue." Death on one hand and life on the other, both of them are in the power of the tongue. That's what he said. That's what James is saying here. Now, which is it going to be? We have the choice. We have the choice. And whether or not our faith is strong enough in the principles of God, in the morality of what's right and wrong before God, determines whether or not it's going to be death or it's going to be life as a result of what we say. The influence of the tongue is beyond our imagination. It's infinitely good on one side of the coin, to the building up, the encouraging of others and finding all the positive that we can in others, or on the other side of the coin, then full of deadly poison, tearing down, emphasizing the negative, always finding the mistakes in others? It's one or the other. And we have the choice. That's what James is telling us. We're to be masters of our own tongues. That's our responsibility. But unfortunately, we choose the wrong things too much of the time. I want to talk to you about that tonight. Talk to you about some of the sins that result as we do not control our tongues like we should. Sins that are common to man. When the tongue is unbridled, like a horse that hasn't any bridle, horse just runs free, does anything it wants to, goes any place it wants to, just like a ship without a rudder, out there just going any place in the sea. Our tongue can do the same thing. When it's unbridled, then there are sins that result from that. I want to talk to you about those sins tonight. You may think of some others. I want to talk to you about some that I think are important for us to think about. First of all, let's talk about gossiping. I've put some other words with each of these four points that we're talking about tonight that seem to be similar to me. You may find differences with those, and that's up to you, but I think these words are similar. The idea of gossiping is that of tattling, tale-bearing, being a busybody. This word is defined this way. It means to boil up, to throw up bubbles of water. Now, this is Thayer's definition. Since the bubbles, he says, are hollow and useless things, it means to indulge empty, foolish talk. It's used of persons uttering and doing silly things, garrulous, babbling. Just as bubbles of water are empty and serving no purpose, he said, that's the way gossiping is. Serving no purpose. A lot of activity, but no good purpose. Thought that was an interesting definition. Someone has said that gossip is a little insect. It has neither legs nor wings. It is wholly made up of tails, and most of them have stings. Paul in 1 Timothy 5, 1 Timothy 5 and verse 13 says this, and besides this, they learn to be idle, wandering about from house to house, and not only idle, but also gossips and busybodies, saying things they ought not. Useless, bubbling. I thought it was interesting that Roger compares this word or these words to a snitcher, one who's snitching on somebody. He compares these words to a spy. Been watching somebody, spying on somebody, sharing the information with somebody else. He compares it to a peeping Tom. He compares it to a traitor. He compares it to a busybody. Solomon, Ecclesiastes 11, verse 13 says, a talebearer reveals secrets, but he who is of a faithful spirit conceals a matter. A lot of things that we know. Each and every one of us have friends. A lot of things that we're privy to that nobody else is. But a talebearer, a gossip, a busybody, will not keep that a secret. Go around making everybody else know about that business. One who is of faithful spirit, Solomon says, conceals the matter. Someone has said, and I want to repeat it to you, there are three questions you ought to ask yourself before you ever repeat anything that you know. Anything. you find out something about somebody else, ask yourselves these three questions. Number one, is it true? Do you know without any reservation? Here's where the thinking needs to come in before we start speaking. The matter that you know about, is it true, number one? Do you know that it's true? Number two, can good come from telling what you know? And number three, will your telling what you know help that person? If we could just ask ourselves those three questions, is it true? Can good come from it? Will it help the person? If we could answer affirmatively to all three of those, I think we'd be in the clear to go ahead and tell what we know. I remember distinctly many years ago, there was a preacher's wife that always stood by him at the door. And I can remember numerous times hearing somebody ask this godly woman about somebody else. And you know what her answer always was? I never heard her give any other answer. She said, "You need to go ask them." And I'm certain beyond any shadow of a doubt that woman knew the answer to the question in most of the cases. But instead of even sounding like or looking like she's going to be a gossip, I think you better go ask them. As kindly as she could say it. I never heard her repeat anything. I wish that there were more people like that woman. You ought to go ask her. You know, that kind of an answer doesn't spread anything that's evil. Doesn't spread anything that's wrong. A second area that becomes sin is that of evil speaking. And I've compared it to slandering and lying and backbiting. It's defined by Thayer to speak reproachfully, specifically of those who, by contemptuous speech, he says, intentionally is a key word, come short of the reverence due God or to sacred things. They just intentionally have no reverence for God or for things that are spiritual and sacred, and they intentionally come short in what they say. Roger compares this word, or these words, to the idea of running somebody down. And the person that gets in the business of running somebody down thinks that he has to look better than they are. And so run them down, make them look worse than he is. He compares it to an envenomed tongue. He compares it to that which is untruthful and that which is deceitful. Solomon in Proverbs 10 and verse 18 says, "Whoever hides hatred has lying lips." Think about that. Whoever hides hatred has lying lips. That's what we're talking about here. And he says on the other side of that coin, whoever spreads slander is a fool. The one who is slandering, the one who's evil speaking about somebody else, the one's lying and backbiting, he's a fool. Bacon once said, "Hurl your calumnies." In other words, your slander and your false accusation. Boldly, hurl them. Something is sure to stick. Reminds me of our politicians today. Just throw all the kinds of dirt and mud you can at your opponent. Something's sure to stick. You hurl enough of it. That's the kind of thing we're talking about here. Let's look at some passages of Scripture together. Romans, the 14th chapter. Romans 14 and verse 16. Paul says, "Therefore, do not let your good be spoken of as evil." Someone might even, in the best of times, when you've done your very best, someone still might speak evil of you. There's always that possibility. That's what we're talking about here. Evil speaking. Someone is still going to find something negative in what you've done, no matter how good it is. But Paul says, set your mind on making sure that you've done your best so that no one can speak evil of it. In Titus, the third chapter, Titus 3 and verse 2, after he's encouraged us in verse 1 to be subject to rulers and authorities and to obey and to be ready unto every good work, he says in verse 2, speak evil of no one. No one. To be peaceable, gentle, showing all humility to all men. It becomes our responsibility. 1 Peter 2 and verse 1. 1 Peter 2 and verse 1. He says, therefore, laying aside all malice, all deceit, hypocrisy, envy, and all evil speaking, as newborn babes, desire the pure milk of the word, that you may be grow thereby. We're not going to grow if we're involved in evil speaking and these other things that he's talked about here. Lay those things aside. And as newborn babes, receive the sincere milk of the word. You grow by that. But we're going to have to lay some things aside. Someone said the breath of accusation kills an innocent name. Being in the accusative mode, or the accusing mode, finding something evil to say about somebody, slandering somebody's good name, it kills an innocent name. Tennyson said, and his advice was, speak no slander, no, nor listen to it. You know, there's a twofold responsibility that we have. Not only should we keep our mouths shut when it comes to evil speaking or slandering somebody's good name, but we shouldn't even listen to it, number two. We find somebody has that kind of an attitude, is engaged in that kind of activity, don't even listen to it. Walk off. They don't deserve an audience. Christians shouldn't be a part of that kind of activity. Both of them are going to produce hard feelings. And both of them, I will assure you, will end up in the lake of fire. A third thing is that of grumbling or complaining, as you can see, fault finding, murmuring. This word there defines to mutter, to grumble, say anything in a low tone. It's used of those conferring together secretly, he says. So you're doing something behind somebody's back. You don't want them to hear what you're saying. You're muttering behind their back. Talking in secret behind somebody's back. You don't have the guts to say it to their face. That's the kind of person we're talking about. Reader's Digest few years ago had this little blurb. It says, nothing is easier than fault finding. No talent, no self-denial, no brains are required to set up in the grumbling business. Kind of puts it in perspective, doesn't it? You know, being a perpetual crank is just inexcusable. I don't know you, brethren, but I'm sure without any reservation, knowing people like I know people, there are people in this congregation who grumble and complain and murmur. Don't like some things that are going on. And we may all at some time or another be involved in this sort of thing or have this attitude and be inclined in this direction. But I'm saying there's no excuse for this kind of attitude. And And we're going to suffer the consequences of being involved in this kind of activity. We're never satisfied with anything. Never like anything that's done. Never like anybody. A little bit like the Jews that Jesus was trying to teach in John the 6th chapter and numerous other places. They just murmured behind his back. They grumbled about him. Didn't have enough guts to say anything to his face. We're a little bit like those people. We complain about the preacher. We don't like what he preaches. We don't like the lessons that he brings to us. We don't like him stepping on our toes. We don't like the elders and what they do, finding fault with them. We don't like the Bible class teachers once in a while. They just don't do their job. We don't like the budget. We don't like the building. We don't like the seats that we have to sit on, and so grumble about them. Complain about them. We complain about the weather. It's either too hot or it's too cold or it's too wet or it's too dry. It doesn't make any difference. There's always something wrong. And you know those people, they're either too friendly or they're too snobbish with us. They're either sick or they're on the verge of being sick. There's always something to complain about. Go with me to Hebrews, the 12th chapter. Hebrews 12. Our God is concerned about our behavior. He's concerned about the kind of lives that we live. He considers us His children. And He chastens us along the way. Chastens us in these areas of morality that we're talking about. And we need to have a good attitude about His chastening. Let's begin in verse 5. Have you forgotten the exhortation which speaks to you as sons? My son, do not despise the chastening of the Lord, nor be discouraged when you are rebuked by Him. For whom the Lord loves, He chastens, and scourges every son whom He receives. If you endure chastening, God deals with you as with sons. For what son is there whom a father does not chasten? But if you are without chastening, of which all have become partakers, then you're illegitimate. You're not sons. Sons are corrected by their fathers. If there's love there, they are chastened. They are corrected. So when we're corrected for such things as this, we need to love our Heavenly Father for that. You know, we complain about pain, but pain is really not an evil. Unless it conquers us. Pain is the price that we pay for all things in this life that are good. It's endurance that we have to have in face of the things that cause us pain in this life. And a great example of that is the Old Testament people, the Israelites. As Paul calls our attention to those in 1 Corinthians, the 10th chapter, he reminds us of their attitude toward the things that God had done. Look with me to 1 Corinthians 10. He warns us of all the things that they had done that we should not do. He comes down to verse 9, for example, he says, "Nor let us tempt Christ, as some of them tempted, and were destroyed by the serpents, nor complain," there's our word, "nor complain as some of them also complained and were destroyed by the destroyer." Let's don't act like they did. Let's learn from their lessons. My father used to correct me and try to get me on the right track. And he'd say, "Why can't you learn from what I've done, from the mistakes I've made? Why can't you see what I've been through? Why can't you learn from that?" I don't know. I guess I just had to suffer some of those same lessons. But I wonder the same thing about my own children. Why can't they learn?
Why can't we learn from these Old Testament people? Why can't we learn from people who've lived godly lives and had difficult things that they faced? Why do we have to murmur like they did? Why do we have to suffer like they suffered? Why would we have to die like these died? Just because we murmured and complained. Paul encourages us in 1 Corinthians 16, verse 13, that we need to behave ourselves like men. Like adults. We need to grow up. One final point then is that of cursing or profanity, the slang, blasphemy. Thayer defines the terms that we're talking about here as railing, reviling, slander, detraction, speech that's injurious to another's good name, and especially to the divine majesty. This is a pretty difficult one to me. You know, we're talking about sophisticated, abusive talk is what we're talking about. Its design is to disguise what is really being said. That's the design of it. Webster says it means to utter a wish of evil against someone, to blaspheme them. Carl Sandburg had this to say. He said, slang is language that takes off its coat, spits on its hands, and goes to work. Go with me to Matthew, the 15th chapter. Matthew 15. We read this one last night. Let's look at it again in this context. Jesus says in verse 19, "For out of the heart proceed evil thoughts, murders, adulteries, fornications, thefts, false witness, blasphemies." That's the things we're talking about. "These are the things which defile a man, but to eat with unwashed hands does not defile a man." Don't worry about those things. It's the things that proceed out of the heart. Again, I'm back to my point we began with tonight. What we fill our hearts with is vitally important because it's going to come out in what we say and how we talk, how we treat others. Paul in Colossians 3 and verse 8, tells us that, "But you now yourselves are to put off all these things: anger, wrath, malice, blasphemy, filthy language out of your mouth. Put it all off." We haven't quite learned that lesson, it seems, from several vantage points. Let me share with you a list I put together many years ago. I walked into a library looking for a list of euphemisms. I want to share with you what the librarians helped me find. Quite revealing to me. I had a problem at the time that I was working on several of these, and I had heard they were not good words to be using, but I just wasn't real convinced about some of them, and so I thought I'd look up and see what some of them actually meant. And as we were looking through various sources, primarily Webster's dictionary, his unabridged dictionary, but not totally from there, we found these words. And I want to share the list with you tonight. We're talking about euphemisms. Euphemisms are used in the place of words that are evil. Words that obviously blaspheme and slander. Webster says it means to use a good word for or in place of an evil word. Roget says it's a false show or affront. It's a trick of behavior. It's a false pretension. I want you to look at this list of words. I'm just going to look at the left side. You can look at the right. Blame it.
son of a bitch by cracky, cripe or cripes, dad, dod or dog, any one of those three, all refer to one, dang it, darn or dern, doggone, drat, egad, gad, gee, goddamn, you can about guess that one, golly, gosh or garsh, gum or gummy, heck. You know, I was going through these, we were finding these words, and these two librarians just got ecstatic. They were obviously trying to be godly people, and they were just horrified with what they were finding. They were saying, I'm just going to change my whole conversation. I've said a lot of these words all of my life and didn't think anything about it. They were just amazed. Convince them. Holy cow. Geez. Lawsy. Shoot. Whiz. Zounds or zooks. I guess, I don't know if you can see those from the back or not, but I realize some people have questioned me a lot about this. Is this really true, they ask? And I said, well, you go look up for yourself in Webster's Unabridged Dictionary and you'll find most of these words there. And he'll tell you very plainly it's a euphemism. But there are other books I found some of the others in. Some have asked me about some others. I don't know. I haven't found some of those others, and so I haven't put them on the list. Somebody says, well, what do I say in place of this? I'll tell you what you say. Nothing. We don't always have to comment about something. We don't always have to say something. We need to keep our mouths shut once in a while. We'd stay out of a whole lot of trouble. And even if you look at these as just being, well, maybe they're wrong, maybe they're not, wouldn't it be better? Wouldn't it be better not to say them than to take the chance of condemning your soul to hell or somebody else's? Wouldn't it be better? I'll leave that question with you as we conclude the lesson tonight. You know, Christ gave himself, sacrificed himself for our sins. He knew there would be times in our lives when we weren't going to be the kind of people that we ought to be. We'd be making some mistakes along the way. He wanted to deliver us from this present evil world, Paul tells us in Galatians 1 and verse 4. And I remind you again that speech is a mirror of our soul. Whatever our heart, our mind is filled with, that's going to come out in the things that we say. And controlling our tongue is a sign, James says, of controlling our whole body. Now just keep that in mind. And Jesus reminds us in Matthew the 12th chapter, verse 36 and 37. I want to read that to you in conclusion. Matthew 12th chapter, verse 36 and 37. He reminds us of what danger there is with a tongue. He says, I say to you that for every idle word men may speak, they will give an account of it in the day of judgment. Now look at what he said. For every idle word. Idle word. Really no purpose for it. We say it anyway. That's, I think, where these largely are, the euphemisms. We say them anyway.
Say nothing of the fact that they blaspheme God, in my estimation. He says, for every idle word, you're going to give an account the day of judgment. For by your words, you will be justified. And by your words, you will be condemned. How do you feel tonight? You need something changed in your life? You need to repent before your God tonight? The opportunity is yours as we stand and sing this invitation song.